I see gold. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 475, to be broadcast on Wednesday, March 18th, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's out and about at the moment. If you're watching this on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment, but you might not get a response right away because I'm here all by myself today. Bicycle Talk's a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can comment right down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Big shout out to Jason at WHUS for getting all caught up on the Bicycle Talk past episodes. Ron's rant of the week. Aha, kickstand on a high quality bicycle. Why? And why not? Yeah, that's a good question. We will discuss this a little bit further in the show. I have a friend who is getting set up with a really beautiful custom titanium, gorgeous bicycle, big dollars, you know, very, very nice. And she wants to put a kickstand on it because she's got a kickstand on her old bike. We're having discussions about it. As a matter of fact, it has become a huge discussion in Ron's Monday, Wednesday, Friday spin club, as we like to call it, or spin class, indoor cycling classes, I like to call it. But anyway, it's made some great entertainment during hard breathing and hard workouts. So anyway, it goes on. Second thing on my rant, the price of war and gas. What about the rising cost of gas right now? What if the rising costs of car dependency were as visible as gas prices? We'll talk about that a little bit more in the show. We've got a little piece from Streets Blog on that. Okay, positive side, daylight savings time. Yay, you know, it's lighter later. Very nice. Get out, ride your bike. Nice. And of course, if the weather holds up, then, you know, it's not so bad either. But that's not always a promise here in New England. We kind of, you know, deal with what we deal with. Today we are dealing with 57 degrees and pouring down rain. So that's what happens. But at least it's warm out. But that's not going to last very long either, because it's going to get cold again. And, you know, it's constant. But anyway, spring is sort of here. I think we're four or five days away, something like that, something crazy. But anyway, that's something to talk about. And let's see here. I've got also, I would like to, on a positive side, shout out to Boston and Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the bicycles are a booming, and there's a reason why. We'll talk about that more in the show. Mechanical minute and bicycle tips. Not even going to talk about the cervical fusion blues right now because, you know, I'm moving a little better. Everything looks good. So anyway, we're getting there. You're getting there. It's an effort, that's for sure. Heart rates. So someone brought this up, as we have many, many discussions when I'm teaching indoor cycling class. One of the discussions that came up was about heart rate. I find that most, and this is a little weird to me, but because it's important to me, but most of the people who are taking my classes do not wear heart rate monitors or know what their heart rate is. If they do, they're looking at their wrist to see if they have, you know, maybe it's on a watch or something like that, because all the new watches really are very, very accurate for that sort of thing. I particularly wear a a polar heart rate strap, chest strap, and I record it with an app which I really like called iCardio, and you know, it gives me all the information I kind of need. It's kind of great. Also transfers over to Strava for what that's worth. It's really not worth anything, but Strava is Strava. I'm going to get into opinions and it's just going to get ugly, so we'll just move on that one. And the question was, you know, how low a heart rate have you ever had? So I went back into the years, and, you know, when I was younger, much, much younger, I was riding my bike a lot. I had just returned from a cross-country bicycle trip. I went on to start racing my bicycle, so I was riding my bike hard and riding a lot, and my heart rate would get down as low as 38 beats per minute. Now, you can't compare my heart rate to your heart rate, to anybody else's heart rate. Everybody is different, and my heart rate is nowhere near that on my resting rate now. But anyway, that's what it was. But somebody said, so what's the lowest heart rate? So there was a cyclist many, many years ago. His name was Miguel Indurain, and he had a resting heart rate of 28 beats per minute. So just when you think you got a low resting heart rate, guess what? Now, Miguel Indurain was a professional bicycle racer, and he was extremely fit and very talented and, you know, won a lot of races, etc. But anyway, we started this conversation last week with a power versus heart rate, which is better. And so I'm calling this power versus heart rate, which is better. Discussion continues, because I had people asking me, you know, what does that heart rate thing mean anyway? What does it matter? And that's a really, really good question. It really doesn't matter a whole heck of a lot. And because everyone's going to be different. So I went to Trainer Road and I took a look at what they had to say. And someone had written in and they said, I was wondering if a low resting heart rate would have any significant meaning for a cyclist. Is it good to have a low resting heart rate, or is it the other way around? I'm asking because after getting in better shape, my resting heart rate is getting lower. My heart rate is almost as low as when I peaked last year, and now my heart rate is lower than a lot of the guys I know, so I'm just trying to figure out what it does and does it have any upsides. And then they gave their resting heart rate, and that's irrelevant because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. A low resting, so the Trainer Road team wrote back to him and said, a low resting heart rate is a sign of good fitness. Well, that's good. Although you don't have to have extremely low resting heart rate to have good fitness. It's a relative thing. Didn't I just say that? So as you get more fit, your own resting heart rate goes down. There's no need to compare with other people. So, and then other comments here as a general rule, a lower heart rate means you have a higher stroke volume, i.e. the amount of blood your heart can move per beat. Now, this is a problem as you get older. And I am going to definitely mention that if you have any concerns whatsoever about your heart rate and your bicycle riding and how it affects your bicycle riding, or if you're feeling in any way dizzy or heavily fatigued or whatever, please, 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 please see a doctor. Cardiologists will take a good look at you and figure out what's going on. And you have to be super careful here because I am seeing more and more of my friends, as we are all old and riding our bikes still. I'm not old, I'm just seasoned. Anyway, I see a lot of people I know that have gone into something called AFib, which is uncontrollable rates of heart up and down all over the place, sometimes super low, sometimes super high. It's a little weird, and it's definitely something that should be looked into very, very carefully. So again, I am not here to offer any advice on this whatsoever. Please see a doctor if you have any more questions or concerns. You just don't know. So anyway, that they didn't really have any real scientific answers here, which I was a little disappointed in. I was kind of hoping for a little bit more than that. But there are other things out there that you can look up, and you can determine whether or not you know, this is something that is a problem or not for you. So I would definitely be cautious about the heart rate game. I wouldn't get into the heart rate game at all. I think that is a recipe for disaster. So please, please, please know your numbers. Watch your numbers carefully. If you see any major fluctuations in your numbers, that is a flag and a flag of concern, and you should talk about it. Now, when I go see my cardiologist, which is coming up sometime soon, maybe next month, April, I think. When I go see my cardiologist, I bring him my results from both an indoor workout and also an outdoor bike ride. And I hand them to him, and he looks at me and he goes, "What's this?" And I explain to him, "Well, that's my latest workout. That's what I just did. And I just wanted you to see, you know, where I was at as far as my, you know, my heart rate goes. And you can kind of watch it and see how it works. And you can see the highs and the lows and all that. And the percentages of time that I'm in certain zones and all that." And he just shakes his head. He goes, "I just don't have people like you." So anyway, yeah, some of us are a little obsessed with it, but I tend to be watching it even closer now than I have before, because I am the recipient of a quadruple bypass. Thanks, Dad. Anyway, yeah, it's genetic. It's a thing. It's very unfortunate, and the real unfortunate part is not knowing enough about it when my dad was 61 years old and he dropped a massive heart attack and we lost him. So that part is very sad. That's why you need to pay attention to what's going on. Always pay attention. What I found was I was out for a bike ride and I was having trouble breathing. I wasn't having trouble breathing. I was breathing really, really hard. I was just breathing harder than I normally would. And on a, you know, just a short 10% steep climb, shouldn't have been that hard. Anyway, know your body, know what to expect, know what to look for, and don't be afraid to go talk to somebody about it professionally, because they can really help you out. All right, that takes care of my issue with with the heart rate. So the other part of this, though, is the wattage issue. Okay, so the wattage issue is the other end of the spectrum here. It's very, very much related to your heart rate. How can that be? Well, as I've said in past episodes on this show, if you get onto a bike which is measuring your wattage as well as your heart rate, or you have a program which is measuring your heart rate, which is what I like to use. So I've got it on a screen in front of me. I actually use an iPad when I teach my classes. And I've got my music over here, and I've got a split screen, and then I've got the workout here, and then I've got my personal information over here. So I can just kind of click around and take a look at what's going on with myself while I'm teaching the class, and then stay online with the workout that I had planned for that day. But anyway, the bike that I am riding on, which is it's an indoor bicycle. It's made by a company called Kaiser, which I'm very impressed with this company, because I really find that these bicycles, I'm not trying to endorse them in any way. You can get any spin bike you want or any indoor cycle you want. You can, there's trainers that hook up to your current bicycle or maybe an old bicycle because you don't want to sweat on your current bicycle. There's a lot of different ways to go, but this is a more of an institutional type of machine, and they really like perform well, and they are, I give them the 10% rule. They're within 10% accurate of wattage capacity. So I think they're really good. I think the other thing is that they you know, you go through certain things. You go through saddles on them, and you go through pedals on them. And otherwise, they just don't need a lot of maintenance. So they're really, really good buy for a gym, because they don't end up having to put a lot of service work into them. And they're built drive and all that. So they're very nice. But anyway, back to the wattage. So I'm watching my wattage, and I can see my wattage change. So this past weekend, on Sunday, I did an hour and a half class, which we call extreme spin. And my hour and a half class simply was long period of warm-up. I spend 15 minutes warming everybody up, because I really like to be warmed up. I'm not one of those dive into spin class, let's get this over with, and then go just melting out the door in a big puddle of sweat type of instructors. I instruct by way of common sense. Interesting, huh? Anyway, I find some spin classes tend to be, let's put it in terms that we can understand, mildly abusive and not very smart. And so I tend to stay away from that idea. And I know that there are some instructors out there that just love to kick people's butts really, really hard, but that's not really what I'm after. I'm not after that. I'm after people understanding cycling and getting to understand their bodies and that sort of thing. But anyway, so we did a workout which was very simple. We would ride at basically, I have something I call comfortably hard. It's also known as my fitness threshold, my FTP. And you ride at that level for about 2 minutes, for 2 minutes. And then 2 minutes, and then you rev up the RPMs. Do not change the resistance. You just rev up the RPMs by anywhere from 10 to 20 RPMs higher than what your normal cadence would be for your FTP. Now, that doesn't seem like very, very hard. First one's only 15 seconds. Not hard at all, really. Not bad. You got 15 seconds. You rev it up. It's just kind of a quick sprint. And then you bring it back down to your normal cadence, and still not changing the resistance whatsoever. And then 15 seconds later, you do 30 seconds and you hold that at a higher, much higher cadence. If you're looking at the wattage meter on the bike, you can see the wattage meter instantly go up when you do that. So higher cadence can give you higher wattage or higher performance. So wattage is something that we like to increase as much as we can, because the better you get at a higher wattage and being able to maintain your heart rate at that higher wattage, the more power you have, the faster you can go, the quicker you can accelerate. There's a lot of factors involved. And of course, when you get to the hills, you've got some motor behind you to get up the big steep hills. We live in a land of big steep hills. So therefore, it's important. So high wattage is, it's stated here at this website, high wattage is the holy grail of cycling. Okay, we spend hours in the pain cave trying to improve the numbers, sweating it out on an indoor bike trainer so that outdoor rides become a breeze. The ultimate goal for any cyclist is to be able to ride faster for longer while expending less energy and becoming more efficient in the saddle. Sounds like a piece of cake, right? It's not that easy. So we're going to talk about how you can get more watts cycling and increase your power output to become the ultimate cycling machine. That would be you, the cycling machine. So what's a good average wattage? When you're considering your average wattage, it's important to remember that different cyclists will need different power outputs to achieve the same speed and acceleration. your cycling wattage will be dependent upon a long list of factors, including but not limited to your body weight, your riding position, surface gradient, wind speed, tires, the list goes on. In general, a cyclist who weighs more may be able to crank out more watts, but this is why power to weight ratio is also important. So you get the little skinny Ron right here who can put out this many watts, and then you get my friend Dave who is 120 pounds heavier than I am, and he puts out this many watts. Who's working harder? That's a weird question to ask. Maybe we're both working the same amount. There's too many factors here to really put this into much perspective. If you have a tank of a friend who's super tall, he's built like a house, he's likely to create many more watts in cycling than you, and if you're considerably shorter and leaner. However, that doesn't mean he's a better cyclist than you. It means he needs more power to get up to speed because he's heavier. So, said situation. On a flat road, he's going to feel like it's kind of a breeze to go along at whatever speed he is going along at. I'm going to be sort of struggling with it a little bit. I'm just going to sit on his wheel because I just don't have that kind of power. So that kind of power for me is much harder to achieve. I can do it with proper training. I can get better at it. But the problem is that's the problem. Now, we approach a hill, we get to a hill, and now all of a sudden, my larger friend has to expend a lot more power to get up that hill. And because I am light, my strength to weight ratio is different, and I can go up the hills still using a lot of power, but with a little bit more ease. That's why the little skinny people climb hills faster than the big people do. This isn't rocket science. It's just science. So how quickly can you improve your wattage? So in order to increase your cycling wattage, it's best to follow the 75% rule. The training principle states that throughout the week, 75% of your cycle training should be below 75% of your maximum heart rate. Get that? 75%. Don't forget it. Most people train too hard. I'm gonna make a general statement there, but it's almost always true. If you're familiar with heart rate zones, you realize this means 3/4 of your training should be done in heart rates zone 1 and 2. Yeah, really, really, really low. The other 25% of your training should be done in zones 4 and 5, where the magic happens. You may think that you're doing all this training at maximum effort and feeling like death after every session, and that's the way you're supposed to do it, but that's not the way it works. It just does not work that way. You have to let your body recover. If there's anything I have learned over the years from all the years of cycling that I have done, it is that you have to, you got to give your body a chance to recover from what you're doing to it. And I see that as possibly the biggest mistake that any athlete can make is too hard, too fast, too soon. Yeah. Too much. The two disease, I like to call it. So anyway, if you really want to increase your power to weight ratio, and you've got to work, it's going to take a lot of hard work and patience, and you got to follow that 75% rule. And it's really maddening to do, because if you live in an area like I live in where it's really hilly, it's hard to keep your heart rate in zone 1 and zone 2. Really, really hard. I mean, you have to literally crawl up the hills to do that sort of thing. And even when you do, you're still going to find yourself going over. But if you have a flat area you can ride your bike and it's relatively wind free, then you can pretty much sustain that low heart rate and that low effort level fairly easily. Or you can use an indoor trainer and you'll know exactly what your percentages are and how long you're in certain zones. Just to give you an idea, my zone 4, which is a very hard zone for me to ride in, I spent very little time in on Sunday. It's a total of 8% of the ride, I think, maybe 9% max, and that was it for an hour and a half. You know, it's not 25%, but that wasn't the workout I was looking for, and I spent a lot of time in zone 3, which is in the middle, which is not really, it's not good, it's not bad, but it's what I like to call comfortably hard, or my FTP. So anyway, you gotta sit down and look at it like you're a scientist, okay? You have to evaluate it. You have to take a look and see what it is that you can do to make yourself better. And you have to write everything down. You got to log it, or you can put it on a computer or whatever. On a spreadsheet will work too. Same thing. That'll calculate it out and figure it out for you. But if you go hard all the time, you will not increase your power or your wattage. You'll just stay stuck is what you'll do. And that's probably not what you're looking for. So that's what I got for wattage. it's a tricky area. I will also say, if you are having some concern about this or confusion about this, the best thing to do is to find a good coach and hire a coach that can explain it to you and evaluate your workouts and probably yell at you for going too hard and not being very wise about your training. Okay, so a good coach is worth the money spent if you can afford it. That's all I'm saying. So on the positive side here, okay, we did that. Yeah, all right. So let's go back to, let me go back now and let's talk a little bit about, I got to go to kickstands. Kickstands are just silly. They're silly little devices. If you're not familiar with what a kickstand is, you know that you will now find out that it is an item that flips down and holds your bike up so your bike doesn't fall over. Problem being that the bike will probably still fall over, especially if someone bumps it from the other side. And if it's on the side it's leaning on and they bump it from that side and then it goes over, it falls onto the derailleur. And that is a big bad no. So kickstands are convenient. These are the pros. They allow parking anywhere without searching for walls or trees. Protection for custom finish prevents scratching of a titanium frame against rough surfaces. Well, we won't say that. It keeps you from leaning against something and then having it slide against that something. If it's like a brick wall, or it might scratch paint, that sort of thing. So the kickstand keeps that from happening. Stability for utility, crucial for stability when loaded with touring panniers or groceries, especially with a double leg stand. I would say only with a double leg stand if you're carrying a lot of weight on your bicycle, because the single leg stands just don't support that extra weight that well. So be super careful on that one. So maintenance, certain center mount kickstands can lift the rear wheel up for quick trail side adjustments or, you know, whatever you want to do. I think the center mount stands are probably the ones that are going to work best if you're using a lot of weight or you have a very heavy bike. I have one on an old e-bike, and that seems to be the answer for that because it's heavy. The cons, weight. It adds unnecessary weight, which can be contrary to the purpose of a custom titanium build. You don't want to do it. I'm mentioning titanium because that's what I Googled to see if I can answer some concerns about this. Aesthetics, disrupts the clean lines of a custom frame, yes. Safety hazards, can scratch on obstacles off-road and accidentally drop while riding. That's something you don't want to have happen. And if you ride the roads around here in northeastern Connecticut, our roads aren't perfect. We have potholes, we have bumps, we have things that can engage the kickstand while you're going over them. Not good, because the end result is a big deal. You will end up on the pavement wondering, how the heck did that happen? So anyway, not my favorite item to put on a high quality bicycle. So we're going to take a look at a few things here, and here we go. So kind of went over what the kickstand is and does and how it all works. And it's like I said, I like the tri-stands. If you're carrying extra weight, I think it's a good idea. The single kickstands tend to be a little more unstable, and there are a couple of different mounts that you can get. You can get a mount which is which goes behind the bottom bracket on the rear chainstays. That's the most common way you see it. Or you can get one that connects way back on the rear stay, back by the rear wheel, which is probably going to be something that is, I don't know if it's less in the way or not. It's really hard to say. I'm not a big kickstand guy. So anyway, I mean, it's helpful in certain situations. You got to be super careful when you use them, especially if you're having a problem with the, with bumpy situations, off-road, trails, and or bumpy roads. So I'm just not a big lover of this. There are some ways, other things you could do too, and that is engaging the front brake in some way once you have put your bike up on a kickstand is a way to keep the bike from rolling forward. Another way, Ron's way of doing it, is to always lean the rear wheel against something when you're leaning your bike up and you're not using a kickstand. And that way the wheel has an inability to roll forward because it's against a stationary object like a wall or a pole or something. And the rubber on the tire is gripping and holding on to that. And that keeps it from rolling forward. But the other thing you can do also is you can do something as simple as a thick rubber band on your handlebars. Just slide it up and clamp the lever down and let that thick rubber band. By the way, if you want to know where to get those, go to the grocery store, buy a bunch of broccoli, and you'll find these really, really thick, heavy-duty rubber bands that work great for that sort of thing. And you got to keep one in your bag or whatever if you're going to do that. But it will keep the wheel from rolling forward in the front, too. So it'll just make it a little bit more stable. My other thing that I like to do is, if I am in doubt whatsoever about whether or not my bicycle is going to fall over, I lay it over. I put it on the ground. Derailleur side up always. Remember that. Also, same thing, other pro tip here, is if you're putting it into the back of your pickup truck or if you're putting it in the back of your car or van, derailleur side up, always derailleur side up. Do not lay the bike over on the derailleur because that's when you're going to cause some damage and a problem with your shifting, which could turn into a much bigger problem if you bend the hanger enough to make it go into the rear wheel. It's a nightmare, trust me. So again, kickstands, not such a big fan here, but you know, I know there are people that like them. I know there are people that have to have them. I get it, but it to me, it's just it's sort of an unnecessary item to put on the bike. Not to mention the weight of it and all that. Could you get a custom mount on your custom frame build that you could attach a kickstand to? Probably. That would be something you have to talk to the frame builder about. And as soon as they got done rolling their eyes and saying disgusting things about what you were asking for, they could probably give you a suggestion or two in that case. But it's how do I put this? I said it in the class the other day. It's sort of blasphemy to put a kickstand on a high quality bicycle. Sort of like, and I was trying to get this person to understand it, and she's a strong church going woman, and I said it would be kind of like peeing in the holy water. But anyway, we'll leave on. We'll go on from that. So that's my kickstand story. I'm not going to get too much more into it, although I found all sorts of interesting things, including a click stand, which is an interesting item that folds up and becomes very compact and then extends, and it props the top tube of the bike, and then you lean the whole bike over. It's very clever. It's kind of cute. Works. So that's a possibility, and I'm going to send this over to my friend and let her take a look at that, and I'm going to suggest this because this would be something that would make a lot more sense, and it won't touch the frame in any way, and that will damage it. Oh, God. Anyway, the damage to the frame that you can get from putting a kickstand on is just really, really, really not good. I had a gentleman come into my bike shop many years ago, and he ended up, he had bought a really nice Pinarello bike, nice Pinarello steel road bike, beautiful, had a kickstand on it. And I said, ooh, the kickstand, I don't feel real good. He said, yeah, it keeps loosening up. I keep clamping it down and it keeps loosening up. And I'm like, oh, I took it off. I explained to him very nicely why he shouldn't have it on there. When I took it off, he had crushed the chain stays. And of course, that damage was, I told him that it was really badly damaged. And I said, you know, maybe over the winter on the overhaul, we might want to bring this to a frame builder and just have him take a look at it, make sure it wasn't damaged to the point where it might fail on you. And he was convinced that that would probably be a pretty good idea. Plus, he needed a new paint job on it. And when I got it to my frame builder friend, he looked at it and said, this bike is ruined. And he said he needs to replace all of this. And it cost him over $1,000 to get the kickstand off the bike. So, you know, don't do it. That's all I can say. Just don't do it. Use another alternative, anything whatsoever. But please don't use a kickstand on a high quality bike. Okay, move on, Ron. Here we go. Move on. Let's go somewhere else. Because we've hit it all here. Okay, a couple of things I wanted to bring up. The city of Cambridge, Massachusetts, which got a really high rating, by the way, about bike paths. I think I had talked about this a week or two ago. The city of Cambridge reports better bike lanes led to a surge in bike traffic. The city has recorded 250% increase in bike traffic since 2004. That's a pretty good increase. And what they've done, they've been conducting bike traffic counts at 16 different locations since 2004, the same year the city built its first physically separated bike lane on Vassar Street as part of an MIT construction project. The city conducts those counts on September weekdays during two-hour periods in the typical morning and evening commuting hours, and of 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. and 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. In addition to the citywide growth trend, the counts have revealed even higher growth in bike traffic in intersections where Cambridge has upgraded its bike infrastructure. Many of the places where Cambridge has installed the new physically separated bikeways since 2020, Massachusetts Avenue, Inman Square, along Garden and Brattle Streets, are also places where the city has witnessed the most growth in bike traffic. Surprise, surprise. Yeah, you build it and they will come. That's what that's called. So other findings from this past year's data. The number of reported bike crashes is on a downward trend, even though more people are biking. The rate of bike crashes per million bike miles traveled in Cambridge has declined from around 20 in the early 2000s to about 12 in 2024. Fewer people are riding bikes on sidewalks. In 2004, 15% of people were counted riding their bikes on sidewalks. In 2024, 5% were. The biggest decreases were on streets with new separated bikeways between 2022 and 2024. The rate of increased in counted bike traffic, 250% since 2004, considerably exceeds the city's rate of expansion in physically separated bike lane mileage, which grew by 110% in the same period. So, yay, Cambridge. Let's hear it for Cambridge. Right across the river, let's go look at Boston and see what the Boston data shows. So Boston data shows that new bike lanes successfully shift traffic with fewer cars and way more bikes. All right. So Mayor Wu has hard evidence that her bike lane projects are helping reduce traffic, but her administration is reluctant to share it. Well, we don't want to let people know that cars are not good, because cars are cars. By the way, how's your price of gas going these days? I think I mentioned that in the rant earlier. Yeah, that's what. This is a good thing. I'm the only person that gets excited by high gas prices. Maybe I'm not the only person. I ride a bicycle, so therefore, I look at it as... So, you know, you want to drive your vehicle and the price of gas goes up, you bought the vehicle, you know, there are alternatives out there. There's mass transportation alternatives, should you have it. If you live in a rural area like I do, you could just simply ride your bike and you can get a lot of places and you can really reduce the mileage down on your vehicle. And you know that pedaling around challenge I talk about at the end of the show. We'll get to the end of the show soon because it's coming up. But anyway, the city of Boston's traffic counts show a significant increase in bike trips alongside a modest decrease in motor vehicle traffic on streets where Mayor Wu's administration has built new bikeways in 2024, according to a new City of Boston analysis. We can conclude that better bike lanes projects built between 2023 and 2024 resulted in immediate and substantial increases in bike trips, the city's report concludes. In the summer and fall of 2024, the City of Boston Transportation Department installed a new bollards separating bike lanes on several streets in downtown Boston, Back Bay, Alliston, and Brighton. The projects included a new one-way parking protected bike lane on Boylston Street in Back Bay and an intersection pair of one-way bike lanes in Arlington and Berkeley Streets, a bikeway on Milk Street and Downtown Crossing and the waterfront, and new bike lanes on Beacon Street, Western Avenue, and Winship Street, Alliston, Brighton. So the report compares traffic count from September 2022, the same month when Mayor Wu initially announced her administration's plans to expand the city's bike lane network, and from four separate counts in June and September of 2025, about a year after the city's installation of the new facilities. And they even hired a third-party vendor to collect the data with automatic counters. So bikes now account for 11% of Boylston Street traffic. The route traverses one of the city's densest neighborhoods. Even before it had a safe bike lane, traffic counts recorded hundreds of daily bike trips on Boylston Street in 2022. But the city eliminated one of the street's three motor vehicle lanes to create a protected bikeway in the summer of 2024. Bike traffic increased by an average of 84% across three count locations. At the same time, car traffic declined by 9% from September of 22 to September of 2024 near Fairfield Street and about 14% near Arlington Street. The third count location near Dalton Street was under heavy construction in 2022. So, yeah, this works. Less cars, more bikes. People are still getting where they need to get to, and safer. What part of this do you not understand? This is why we have Bicycle Talk. This is why I talk about this all the time, because it just makes more sense. So, of course, the City of Boston publishes its analysis with a link posted in the City Bikes Project's website, but at some point before the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, someone at City Hall removed the link, although the file itself is still available in the city servers at the time of the publication of this story, which was just published. The city's press office did not address the question on why the link disappeared. I'll give you three guesses. First two don't count. Okay, so we will just move on this, but I wanted to give the big shout out to Boston and Cambridge, my old territory that I used to call on in the bicycle industry. Shout out to all you bike shops that are still in existence in the Boston area. I know we lost a few, but anyway, I think there's some sustainability there because it looks like more people are going to be on bikes here real soon. You may have to change your business plan around a little bit, but I think we're good. I think we're good in Boston. I think a lot of the big cities are pretty good as far as bicycles go. So anyway, I just wanted to give them a shout out. And then last little piece here, because I'm on this bike car thing and gas price thing. So gas station billboards remind U.S. residents every day that driving is getting more expensive. What if they were told a different message about the high cost of auto-centric transportation system? I love this. So this is Kia Wilson, writes for Streets Blog all the time and always has interesting things. So another day, another energy crisis, sky-high gas prices resulting from President Trump's attack on Iran are sending drivers spiraling across America. But what if the high cost of car dependency commanded the same level of attention? Yeah, okay. Motorists are reacting to $7 plus per gallon prices at the pump with rage, but that anger is only part of the broader cause of driver anxiety, the high cost of forced vehicle ownership. Because so many American cities are so heavily car dependent, the U.S. residents have no choice but to pony up cash for and drive away, indeed, even when the gas prices climb above $5 a gallon. Driving, you know, doesn't plummet. A Time magazine analysis at the time found the only time that fuel consumption really took a hit in the last 23 years was during the pandemic. And that, of course, had nothing to do with gas prices, which had collapsed. Needless to say, people who are functionally forced to drive everywhere can't opt out of other immediate costs of car ownership, like vehicle maintenance, repair, insurance, financing, fees, right? All these things. And then the broader cost of dependency, like scarce and expensive housing, rising public health burdens, and staggering costs of pollution and climate change are just to name a few. So what if we had other signs up there, like the real cost of car ownership? Buying a used car, way too much. That would be on the sign. On the other side would be new, $11,577 a year. Got that? A year. So when drivers see gas prices soar, even those prices have barely kept up with the inflation, which they demand the politicians to bring them down. However, they have one quarter of their paychecks goes towards their car. That's sad. You could barely get a mortgage for a house years ago when I was first getting a mortgage for a house if the cost of that mortgage was more than 25% of your salary. Got that? Now it's what you pay for a car. So what about this? What about a sign that had a road violence totals? Pedestrian killed so far this year citywide, cyclists injured so far this year citywide, and total road users killed so far citywide. What if these were billboards that were up? I think these are brilliant. By the way, Kia, great job. Great job. The falling share of walkable neighborhoods. Percentage of land devoted to walkable neighborhoods. Percent of the U.S. population that live in walkable neighborhoods. Percent of U.S. GDP that comes from walkable neighborhoods. Yeah. These are all definitely things to look at. $750 million plus of canceled grants for life-saving walk-bike projects. Yeah. So anyway, what if these were advertised? What if this information was out there on a regular basis instead of these giant billboards for gas stations of, you know, lowest price in town or this much per gallon? And, oh, look, it just changed like right before my very eyes. That's interesting. Why did the price of gas just go up another 40 cents? Put it together, folks. If you can't get the oil out of the Middle East, and it's, yes, we do have enough oil to do our own country right here, but it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. It's a shared economy. And you know, the price of gas is only going to, it'll always go up. It rarely goes down. I will tell you that when I was a young lad working in my dad's gas station way, way back in the time before the dinosaurs, and I was pumping dinosaur fuel into cars, we were pumping it in at 29 cents a gallon. Yeah, 29 cents a gallon. Can you believe that? Yes, I am old. I did see that. I am old. But, you know, that's the thing. It always goes up. It always, always goes up. Now they're also talking about the increase in diesel fuel is going to be the really big jump. And this country runs on diesel fuel, folks. That's how those big trucks transport everything to your stores where you buy things like, you know, food and groceries and your clothing and anything you need around the house, supplies, going to the lumber yard, transported. They're all transported by diesel. Not to mention, if you live up here in the Northeast, where we burn a whole heck of a lot of fuel oil in rural locations primarily, but cities more have a natural gas situation. But that's number two diesel fuel, and it's only going up. So, you know, start a little war, cause a lot of chaos. And that's exactly what's going on right now. There is an answer, and you are listening to it right now. Ride your bicycle, right? Ride your bike. Take a look at it. Take a look at what it's going to cost you to drive for a week, and then take a day out. Take 2 days out. You know, you can do what my friend Dave did for years. He had a pretty long commute. It was like a 35-mile commute. So he was concerned that he didn't want to put a 70-mile ride in every day, because 35 miles to work, 35 miles back home, that's a lot of riding. So what he would do is he would drive his car in on Monday with changes of clothes for the week, and then he'd ride his bike home. And then he would ride back in, and then he would take the car and go back and forth with the car. So every other day he was getting in. There's a simple solution to every problem out there. So anyway, you can figure it out. Drive your car part way and ride your bike the rest of the way. Yeah, that's a solution. That's another way of dealing with it. And you will cut your commute in half by doing that. So that means it's going to cut your costs in half. Be smart when you're driving your motorized vehicle. If you have to get groceries, don't go home and then go back out. Stop on the way home. You know, there's ways of doing it. You just have to think smart about it. That's all. And so, you know, you can do it. But boy, if you start getting hooked on the bike and you realize that, wow, I'm not just riding my bike back and forth to work once a week. I'm actually doing it three times a week. And then you realize that you don't have to go to the gas pump as much. Now the cost of those high prices in the gas pump aren't really as much of a concern for you, because you're taking some responsibility to the problem. And this is exactly what the car and oil industry does not want you to do. Do you understand that? You are a victim of their crime. So don't do it. Don't endorse them. Don't help them. You know, we are a car-centric country. It really stinks that we are that way. I grew up around cars. I understand this completely. My dad owned a gas station. I always had a car. Cars were like a thing. That's what you did. You had a car. And that's how you got around. And then, you know, as I discovered my bicycle, and yeah, I discovered it, guess what? Right about the same time I got my driver's license, I got really hooked on the whole bicycle thing. I started using my bike for like transportation, you know, for I'm just going to go ride my bike over there instead of, you know, taking the car. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then you realize that you can do that, especially when you're really fit. When you get really fit, it's not a burden at all. It's not hard on the body. It's just not a really hard thing to do. So consider it. Do I have any time for this? Not a whole lot here. Jonas Vingegaard and the Paris-Nice race. He won it by over 4 minutes, I believe. The race to the sun is what that is also known as. Just dominated in the race. Very interesting. He looks like he's in pretty good shape. Is he in as good a shape as Tadej Pogačar? Who the heck knows? That Mr. 360 watts on normal FTP. What the heck is that all about? I can't figure it out. Anyway, we're watching closely. I've got some friends of mine that watch bike racing as obsessively as I do. So we're taking notes and trying to figure out exactly what's going on there. It's what it is. So we're going to move on to finishing points here. And I just want to mention the Frozen Four, which I had not brought up before. The annual Frozen Four training races, they started on March 15th in New Britain, Connecticut. And there are yet three more Frozen Fours to go. March 22nd, April 11th, and April 18th. So these are training races. They're in New Britain. They're up on Bike Ridge. If you're looking for them and you want to get involved in the bike racing scene, you can do that. There's other items coming up. I don't think I have my Naturalhog Epic information in front of me. I'll mention that next week because that's coming up really, really soon. But anyway, that is that. And then, of course, we have a couple of other things, too, that are listed here. And we will get to that next week. And there is that Bicycle Leadership Conference in Dana Point, California, which is beginning on March 17th, which is St. Patrick's Day, this Wednesday, probably the time you're listening to this on the radio. And, of course, we have the Giro d'Italia, which is May 8th to May 31st. The Tour de France, which is June 4th to June 26th. We got the Ride of Silence, which is going to be May 20th at 7 p.m. We have a version of that right here in Storrs, Connecticut. And we've already contacted the Yukon Police Department, and they're all in favor of it. So we're on, by the way. We are on. So that looks really, really good, too. Anyway, this is it. Give us your opinion. Wattage? Heart rate? What is it to you? Does it matter at all? Are you upset about the price of gas at all? Is that starting to make you think a lot more about that bicycle? Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, and our communities are safer, friendlier, and our planet is greener. It's all a good thing. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic. Look what they did in Boston. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. And hey, take that Pedal and Run challenge. Consider parking the car or truck for one day and ride your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment down here below. And If you can't do that and you're listening to this on audio file, send me an email at bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!